Welcome to Medicast. I am Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen. Good morning, Vietnam. Cary, North Carolina. Yes. So we want to welcome you to the Medicast. What are we talking about today, Josh?
We're talking about a conglomerate of things regarding tempo, sprint length. Wait, do you have a problem with conglomerate?
It was just you amazed me with your mastery of the English language
so
early in the morning.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been up for a while. Yeah. Babies do that to you.
Yes.
So, sprint length, tempo, release readiness, hardening, gaps between sprints, things like that.
So mostly, I think it has a theme. I think it has tempo related. So the tempo of your teams and how do you pick things.
Right.
And then maybe, you know, the other thing is migrating it over time. So changing it over time, not every week, but over time, what kind of adjustments to make.
All right. So that was my first question to you, kind of the softball, right, to get the morning started. I'll lob Bob a nice easy one. So tempo, you start with it, you stick with it. How long do you stick with it? Is there like a minimum time frame that's fair for that tempo?
I'm feeling like rubber and glue this morning, so I'm going to bounce it back to you, Josh, and I'm going to say, what do you think?
You can't do that.
I just did.
What do you think?
And now you're on the spot. The Medicast is going to become circular, and you have to answer. Now, what do you think?
I think if you're doing it right and you have short release cycles, then I think you stick with it for a release, just to give it a fair shake. Hopefully your release cycles are a couple of months or 3 to 4 months max. That would be that's kind of my gut feel.
So bound sprint length by release cycles.
Assuming your release cycles are reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think the maturity of the team, I think, is probably a major factor as well.
Right.
So I've heard this story from, I'm full of stories amongst other things, right? I'm full of many things.
You said it first.
I know. I beat you to it. But I heard this story from, I think, Schwabers or some old scrum coaches, where they talk about if a team is struggling with a 2-week planning. So tempo aligns with the planning for your sprints. So if a team is struggling with a 2-week sprint, you know, the wizened agile coach says, and the team is struggling, you know, they're yelling and screaming, we can't plan, we can't get work done in 2 weeks. The wizened coach says, well, then now, since you're whining about it, you only get a week.
Right.
Or something like that. And they cut it in half and they make the team do it in a half the time.
Right.
I think the point there is, you know, to force them to what? To plan, to be able to plan.
Right.
And to get feedback. So I think there's this notion of tempo aligns with maturity as well as release tempo. And so let's say you have an immature team and you pick 2 weeks and the first sprint fails miserably because they couldn't plan it. Like 3 days in, you realize shit or crap. Crap.
Uh-oh. We are now Medicast explicit.
We are. So, you know, crap, they couldn't plan it very well, and you don't know what to do with the sprint, then you might actually, I might suggest you adjust tempo right then.
Right.
You might go from 3 weeks to 2 weeks, or two weeks to 1 week or something, just to give that team a break, because they're just on the learning curve. So yeah. I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan, and it feels like opposite to many people whenever I suggest that a new team goes with single-week sprints. And I think it really allows for quicker learning on those transition periods, because that is the hardest part. At least to me, the hardest part is being ready for the planning and doing the planning and getting the estimations right and all that. So the more you do it, the more you're going to fail, but the more you fail, the more you're going to learn.
Well, you plan a week, right? So you get, if you can plan a week, then you can plan two, then right. You can plan three. Did you ever think about this? I always think about like the book. It gave you 4 weeks as the model. Yeah. Right, so when Scrum first came out, when XP came out, everyone was following, you know, Kent Beck's directions. You know, I did it. I did every XP practice blindly because I was really trying to be agile. And Schwaber says 4 weeks. Can you imagine an inexperienced team planning a 4 week sprint?
Yeah, it'd be tough.
And being successful?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that in my life.
No.
So I don't know what, I don't know what was wrong with the guy at the time or something like that. Maybe he was just echoing the experienced team model.
Right. Yeah, and that is a key difference of a very experienced, well-seasoned, cohesive team makes a big difference, right? That they kind of finish the sentences of each other, things like that. When they're really in a groove, everything's a lot easier.
Well, and to your point, it comes back to planning. I mean, I really think, and we didn't put this when we were planning the Metacast, we weren't talking about planning. But I think this planning aspect of if you can successfully plan a sprint, then that's the right tempo,
right.
And you can execute it,
right.
And you can do it relatively easily. But it's not a painful planning session.
Right.
Then your tempo aligns with your maturity,
right?
And you're going to be so. And if that fits into a release sequence, then I think you don't make adjustments,
right?
You just continue to go. What about efficiency of, is there efficiency? I always think of efficiency constraints, like, you know, for a 1 week versus a 4 week. And maybe this is where the Schwabers of this world were coming from. So you and I have talked about the trade-off between the length of the sprint and start and stop times.
Right.
Any thoughts about that?
I always default back to failing fast, right? So if we're going to screw up, number one, we know we're going to screw something up, right? So let's screw up on a smaller scale. Because the larger scale you try and plan, the more of an opportunity you have to make a mistake that affects the larger release or the larger plan. Whereas if you mess up a 2 week sprint, it's pretty easy to recover from that. But if you mess up two of those, it's more painful. So if your sprint's two 2 week sprints or 1 4 week sprint, it gets more dangerous, right? So it's like you're playing the stakes are a bit higher. Right, and so to me, that's always been the trade-off of let's stay at two, because if we fail kind of small.
But the point I'm bringing up is more so the sprints, and you and I have talked about the notorious S-curves.
Right.
And so sprints, not every day of a sprint is the same from a pure, velocity
yeah.
or from a, you know, from a momentum perspective. So right. The first day of a sprint is slower. Than the fifth day of a sprint, let's say a 2 week sprint.
Right.
And the 10th, I would argue that the 10th day of a 2 week sprint is slower, if you will, or it has a different flavor than the fifth day of it. So it has a curvature, meaning the sprints are slow to start and gain momentum, and then at the end, you're wrapping things up.
Right.
So you're trading off wrap up for momentum, for writing lots of code. And that's a typical S-curve flavor. So 2 week sprint, so if I cascade two 2 week sprints versus a 4 week sprint, now I have what? Two starts and two stops.
Right.
Versus one start and one stop. More efficient, less efficient?
To me, it's more efficient to have the two stops because you get that checkpoint and adjustment and are we on the right path? Are the priorities right? What's changed? So knowing the volatility of your backlog really leads to an answer to that question. So if you have a backlog that's pretty solid, right, that isn't going to change much, I think you're probably safer with the 4 weeks. But if your backlog has a tendency to be a bit more volatile or have all these shakeups or new things dropped in or stuff from way on the bottom bubbles up to the top real fast, I think the 2 weeks is going to protect you from that a little bit.
Or team discovery and things like that, yeah. Right? You know, I haven't thought about it. You and I haven't debated this. We were talking about it before the Metacast. We haven't talked about S-curves for like over a year or something. This was something we talked about a long time ago. And when I think about it, I think about raw efficiency.
Right.
But I hadn't thought about risk. And I guess I sort of buy that. This is the rare occasion when you've convinced me.
Yeah, watch out.
So, no, but I mean, I can...
Okay,
I
so this is September 8th, 2010.
Exactly. But no, I sort of buy the risk thing. It's the raw... The part of me, I sometimes get into this rhythm, and maybe it's with a well-oiled... It is this. My perception is driven from a well-honed machine.
Right.
Like a team. Good backlog. Well-honed machine. So what we want to do is be fine-tuning that engine, right? Tuning it up a little bit. And if you're tuning it up, then I worry about, oh my gosh, you know, the 3 days we lost or the 4 days we lost for a two sprint sequence versus the day and a half we might lose. Not lose, but you know what I mean. We haven't generated total momentum.
Right.
And so I'm trying to not salvage, but I'm trying to maintain momentum as long as possible in that well-honed team. But I buy the risk card in that.
Yeah.
And that's probably a better trade-off. Even if you lose a day and a half of coding, or even two. And
yeah, that, I mean, really, it almost gets to lean of what, let's cut out the mess. Let's make sure we're working on the right thing.
Yeah. I guess I sort of buy that. Yeah. Is there an optimum sprint length? Like, would you want to achieve that over time? You know, a year from now, my teams are, you know, some mature, some immature. So don't tie it directly to maturity. But in your mind, is there an optimum length that you would like to see teams tempo at?
I default to two, but I don't think that's optimal. Because I, like, the natural reaction for me is to, well, if we could do it in four, right, I go back to you and say, hey, we're spending less time planning and more time writing code that gets tested and shipped and all that fun stuff. But then it feels like I'm falling back into the waterfall world of let's not check ourselves. Let's not take a step back. Let's not do a retrospective. Let's allow ourselves to fail on a grander scale and not be able to catch it or sense it. So probably the 2 weeks for me is the right tempo from what I've seen, with being able to learn from your mistakes, learn from your positive outcomes, learn from everything, and make those minor tweaks along the way. I think it's always easier to make smaller changes than bigger changes.
So I probably lean towards three. And now I don't always achieve this. I mean, you probably know that my current teams are in a 2 week tempo. At a previous company in the triangle here, we were at 2 weeks, and we were just moving to three. We were reevaluating it because of the S curves and because of the maturity of the team and for efficiency. And we were moving to three and getting good traction out of it. I think that, you know, for me, the Nirvana state is not four. It goes back to what was he thinking in that book. But I think 3 weeks, if you have a mature team, if you have some discovery in your backlog,
right,
you certainly are going to get that discovery. You can certainly replan a sprint if you want to, or, you know, if something blows up in the middle of it.
Right.
But I'm thinking 3 weeks. And even then, to have the release planning be some, you know, derivative of the 3 weeks. So, you know, you have 2 3-week sprints back to back, and then you might have a release at the end of that, is optimum. I'm not sure if I can guide my current teams. One of the things we haven't done is we haven't stabilized to planning the sprint, the 2 weeks, very well, very consistently.
Right.
We can plan them okay, but team to team, you know, on a given, you know, 2 week sequence, at least one of our teams, we have multiple teams, at least one of the teams sort of struggles with that.
Right.
And in order to go to three, I'd really want all the teams
right.
to be synchronized and doing pretty well. But again, I think it's a learning curve. I've not gone to 1 week. Not in software development.
I've threatened it a lot.
I have. That's funny. I have too. I have too. I've seen it. I've taught classes to folks, so I've gotten exposure to, like, agile. I used to teach a lot more agile classes, and I would encounter people who would do things like websites. They would do content management, and they were ideal for. So if you're writing website content, so like Monday and Tuesday on a 1 week sprint was what, write the content.
Right.
Wednesday was like test it and throw it on the site. Thursday might be edit, and Friday was what, push it to production or something like that. So I see a lot of non-software 1 week sprints. You know, content management in my mind is sort of in the sweet spot of that, where it works beautifully.
Well, yeah, and they have a natural weekly cycle.
Anyway, right, yeah. So I see the 1 week cycle for non-software types of, you know, information management and things like that.
Okay.
What about gaps? So, before, you know, gaps in that. So, you know, do we end? So right now my teams, I'll pick on my own teams, we end on, and I don't know if I like this or not, we end on Friday and we start on Monday. So let me describe it, our tempo to you. So Friday is like, every other Friday is we're 2 week sprints. Every other Friday is like bananas. So we're hunting for rooms, conference rooms to have retrospectives in. We run out of rooms. We're looking for, we have sprint demos, and they're back to back to back. So we try to expose the demos to the entire company, which is a powerful part of it. But our demo time, we get complaints from like our senior leadership team. It's like, holy cow, you're investing, you know, we have to come in for 3 hours or three and a half hours for sprint demos. It's a lot. It's a big investment of time. So Fridays are jam packed. Thursdays actually are jam packed with sprint readiness, sprint review readiness, closing code down. So we sort of lose a big part of Thursday. Friday is closed down. Then the teams, they don't want to plan on Monday. they really don't. So Friday afternoon is this frenetic. If we have enough energy in our bodies, we'll try to plan the next sprint.
That seems like a mistake, right?
Right.
It's like you shouldn't plan when you're tired.
But they're trying to squeeze it in because they want to go into the weekend, just from a human being, a human factors perspective. They want to go into the weekend not worrying about it and then come in the Monday morning, hit the ground running. More than half the teams, I think, do planning on Monday morning.
Right.
And then the cycle continues, and then they hit the ground running. Right. So there's no pause between, and that sandwich is pretty frenetic, and probably not high quality. It's not high quality. We do our best. We don't do shabbily, but it's not a high quality event.
Yeah. So we're up to like six teams now, and we just physically couldn't do all of the planning and demos and retrospectives all in one day. So we have three teams that end on Monday, three teams that end on Tuesday. So that ending is there's a demo, and we've really trimmed the fat on our demos. We are the only thing that can be shown or discussed is working software, right? We had PowerPoints, well, this is what we planned, this is what we committed to, blah, 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 blah. Like that doesn't matter. Show people working software. Let's just get down to the nuts and bolts.
Yep.
This is what we're finishing. So those are pared down to each team has 20 minutes max to just get up and show the software.
You squeeze three teams in an hour.
Wow. Yeah. And it gets tight.
I would imagine.
We have timers that, like, you know, because it's not fair if you run over.
Yeah.
Right? So we're pretty strict at that. But we found that when people actually just talk about the software and show what they've done, that's all it takes. And then we have planning for those three teams that same day. So we have a couple teams playing in the morning. We have our demo from 1 to 2, and then another team plans after that. So it's a little bit funky because there are some teams that plan before the demo. So they put a little bit of fudge factor for any demo feedback or anything like that.
So that would be a downside to what you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But are you synchronized? Do you consider yourself synchronized?
Yeah.
So does one team like have a 9-day sprint effectively and the other 10?
No. They're both 10. It's just when you start and when you finish throughout that Monday. So it's still a 10-day cycle, but there are teams that kind of end at noon and start at, like, 12:01.
Yep.
And then there are teams that end at, like, 2 and start at 3:01 or 4:01, right? So it's not ideal, but given the number of teams we have and trying to squeeze it into a reasonable time frame, we end up having to spread that planning out over a couple of days. And
I think we're at that point. I mean, we've just added, we're going to announce another team. So we've been growing our teams, sort of adding people to our existing teams, and we're going to, like we're Amoeba, we're going to split off a team.
Right.
And I think at that point we'll have four teams, actually five.
We went to dual day planning once we had four teams.
Yeah,
because we couldn't squeeze all four.
So I think we're on the cusp of that. It's incredibly frenetic. One thing I've done at a previous company, and I actually like it. I don't know why I haven't. Again, I get soft in my old age, and I don't really I don't push teams as much as I used to. Or you know, you pick your battles. But we had a gap. So we would have a two. So our sprints, we would sprint for 10 days. So we had a 2-week sprint, if you will. But then we had a 2-day pause between sprints.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't align towards week boundaries. So it wasn't Monday, Friday. We just laid it out on the calendar. And for example, one of the things we would do is if there was a vacation day or a holiday, we would skip over it and just say, you know, just skip that and it's a 10-day sprint. So we would really focus on 10-day sprints. And then the first day of the pause, if you will, was focused on demos and sort of retrospectives. And it was interleaved. We were interleaving much like you're describing in these 2 days because we didn't want to go through everyone. The demos were together, but planning and retrospectives got a little gnarly.
Right.
There's about 10 teams in the mix here. And then we do planning on the second day. So essentially it was sprint close down on the first day and sprint what open planning on the second day, right, a little bit advanced, and then we would go for another 10 days. So we had these little windows, if you will, in our sprint plans when we would lay out a release. So we would do that. Any thoughts? Any reactions to that? Wasteful? Stupid?
No, I think at that point you're really just doing an 11-day sprint.
You think so?
Or a 12-day sprint or whatever, yeah, whichever end you want to pack it on. I think that's all you... I mean, you're doing the same thing, right? You're just extending in a couple of days. So you always have this perfect 10-day working time.
The thing that we had, it helped our velocity because you hit the nail on the head. What we did is we had a perfect 10-day work... Well, it wasn't perfect. There was still a little bit of an S-curve going and out. But it was very nearly like you had full 10-day momentum.
Right, exactly, because you have Thanksgiving week or just Labor Day, right? So we ended up losing a day this week from our sprint.
Even if we had a picnic, an off-site picnic or something, we would at least discuss it. So we would be laying things out, over the course of weeks and stuff. But it was the 10 days. The reason I felt sort of strong about it is it was the 10-day focus. The other thing is what I'm finding with our existing teams, I'd be interested to see what you said. I think you can sprint, even though Agile is supposed to be this humane, sort of 100% capacity, I think you can sprint yourself to death sometimes.
Right.
That's what I see in our teams at points in time. What do you observe the same thing?
Yeah, but it really, what I've seen when that
But you don't care.
Well,
you
I
just
do.
Want to see, you just want to ride them.
I do, but what I've seen is that it's a product of some failures that we've had. So when it gets difficult on people, it's when we don't plan as well. So when we don't plan as well, we don't groom as well, right? So that's, to me, it's always come back to are we what we would define as ready. Right. So we have this big concept of done, right? Are we done? Is it tested? Blah, 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 blah. So now, going into a sprint, we can't work on a feature unless that feature is ready.
Are you doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I was at the Agile conference, and readiness. So it used to be doneness criteria, right? Yeah. At the end of the sprint was one of the big things. And this year, one of the things you heard, I think a couple people talked about it in talks, but was readiness criteria.
Right.
I heard it from Salesforce.com. And they're really stringent on readiness. And you know what? I interrupted you.
No,
but they're talking about dependencies. One of the things they were trying to manage, if you have a team that has a story card that has a dependency to another team, you're not ready. And we do this a lot. We just dive. We just dive headlong in.
Yeah.
And then we'll figure out, our logic is we'll figure out the dependency as we go. And we don't.
Right.
We don't do it effectively. But their dependencies, that other team has got to commit to that work in order to make that story ready to execute. Or if there's two teams that you're dependent on, it's part of their readiness criteria, and it really helps with what dependency management. So there's a lot of talk around that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our biggest thing in looking back on retrospectives on releases and sprints and all that stuff, it's always come back to, were we ready to start working
on
this?
It's funny that isn't it neat about Agile that teams come to these conclusions? It's the continuous learning part.
Right, yeah.
I love that about Agile, actually. And now I'm not being smarty pants about it, but it really is one of those things where I think maturity, and your teams are more mature, that a lot of teams across the world come to these same conclusions.
Right.
We stole the idea. So you came to it naturally. We were sort of going there, but now, after we heard it at the conference, it was like, this is one of our, that's one of our huge problems. So we're like all over readiness right now, particularly dependencies. The thing that destroys us is, and I think a lot of Agile teams actually, not I think, I know, a lot of Agile teams really struggle with dependencies. Cross-team dependencies are really tough to manage at times. Have we covered most of our stuff? Oh, we didn't. Oh, there's a topic. So let's bump up to release level.
Oh boy, okay.
Bump up to release level. Why don't we both start by describing, like, relatively quickly what our current team release dynamics
I'd
are
rather
like?
Not.
You really? Is it proprietary?
No,
it's a secret.
It's not that it's proprietary. It's painful. So we are on massive release cycles. If I'm lucky, we're 6 months.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So we are planning a release right now that's accompanied by much kicking and screaming from yours truly, that's on you know, the yearish size, and that's just destined to fail. And it's not destined to fail because the team can't deliver, but it's destined to fail because we're going to commit to a plan because we have to as a large company, and the funding we get from up above and all that stuff, at least so I'm told, right? I keep asking those questions of why. Well, can't we do it like this? Can we?
And
eventually they're going to get sick and tired of me complaining and throwing out these other options that they're going to say, okay, just be quiet and we'll try this. You know, so
or they'll just tell you to shut up and plan is the release plan.
That's what they're doing now.
Exactly.
Right. So
that could continue. Yeah.
Nothing's going to change there. So things change, right? So once you get started, as soon as you write it down, something's changed.
Do you get a chance to show your code to customers? You don't. You're not. I hope you're not showing code to customers like at the end of that release sequence.
So, historically, that's what we did. We have realized the power of that. And in the last two releases, we've had... we tried to do it monthly. The customers didn't want to commit to it that often. And they're willing to commit to it now after they've seen...
the progress,
Right. So, at first, they well, that's too much. You know, I just want to see it when it's done.
Yep.
Like, just come and sit and listen and talk and give us feedback. And they've been able to see the power of that, of seeing things when they're not all the way done, they're partially done, and they can redirect things. So we're getting to a monthly schedule of having a external demo.
So that would that be triggered from the end of a sprint, probably, right? So
yeah. Well, it's triggered by that, but it just gets down to scheduling of, you know, some of our large customers, right?
So I'm going to be harsh. So you're agile on the inside, but you're mapping your agile deliveries to a very long, lengthy, traditional waterfall, stage-gated, well, this sounds terrible, process.
Yes. You know, you were there.
Yeah, I was there.
Don't act so surprised.
I know. Well, it could have changed.
Yeah, well, it could happen. Yeah, so, and I'm working on that. I've got all kinds of ideas.
So ours is, we're a software as a service provider, so we're just really a hosted solution. So one of the advantages we have, there's reasons why you're in the position. Your domain requires that, right? You have very lengthy installation and upgrade cycles. So it's not stupidity, but there are reasons behind it. In our domain, it's a hosted environment, which allows us, you know, we could make releases every day if we wanted to. We could push to production. We have about 65,000 customers that would be that are affected by our releases. So our release tempo is we have two-week sprints, and so we're building content over 4 2-week sprints,
right.
And then we have a hardening sprint. So this segues into hardening. A hardening for us is what do we do during hardening? Mostly testing. Not that we haven't tested along the way, right. But we're doing more regression testing. We're doing some bug fixing and hardening. We have a notion of a code freeze. So we're actually ending this Thursday. So tomorrow is our code freeze.
Right.
Friday is the end of our fourth sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so next week for us is going into hardening. So we code freeze our databases like 2 days ago. So we have, you know, a database configuration freeze. We have a code freeze. We go into hardening week. We'll run regressions. We actually go through trial deploys or what we call mock deploys,
mm-hmm.
where we'll go through the sequence of steps. We have checklists
right.
for deploying. We want perfect deploys, right? We want low error deploys. We'll go through that next week, and then we'll push that Saturday. So we'll push on Saturday, actually early Saturday morning. We'll do a push to production.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole team or nearly. Yeah, most of the team comes in. And then on Monday morning, so we have a little wiggle room on the weekend if something goes wrong.
Right.
But then on Monday morning, we're actively live again. Right. Customers are using it over the weekend, though. And then we repeat that. Then we have a weird thing, which I struggle with. The week after release, we call stabilization. And just in case we have hot fixes to do, keep in mind lots of customers, and we're not perfect. And then we might take the next week to stage the release. So we're doing sprint planning, or release planning,
mm-hmm.
and sprint planning. And then we'll kick the tires again. So we have like 2 weeks of down. We have a 2 week pause between releases. So we don't pause between sprints,
but we really have a 4 week feature freeze.
We have a four, is it? So hardening week, stabilization week, three. There's 3 weeks. So if you look
there's
only 1 week of hardening. Okay. And we don't have a lot of automation. So one of the things for us is when, you know, testing is still onerous for us because it's a lot of manual testing effort. We should be able to narrow. We're investing a lot in automation. So hardening should narrow, hopefully, over time.
Right.
Stabilization week could narrow, but we like the comfort because you never know what's going to happen out in the wild.
Right.
So we like the comfort of that. Whenever we have idle time, we're fixing. We do a lot of bug fixing, backlog bug fixing during that pause. So executives always like, you know, what are you guys doing? Are you, you know, drinking, you know, drinking martinis and listening to music? And it's like, no, we actually find things to do in the gap. So that's our release tempo. Reactions?
Well, for someone that's trying to squeeze every ounce of productivity I'm just saying, couldn't you spread that out throughout the process?
Spread what out?
Release planning. So I guess I question why the whole second week.
I could feel this coming from when I did this intentionally. It's like throwing a red flag in front of a bull. So my first question is, Bob, make the list, Josh. One of the things I can't say as strongly as I feel, we don't groom very well.
Right.
So that's, you can kind of see that. We don't groom very well. We do release planning pretty well, which is this high-level epic. We do high-level epic, you know, we use a technique called blitz planning that Alistair Coburn created, but it's really just high-level end-to-end planning.
Right.
We do that, and we do it pretty well, so we rationalize our roadmap. If you look at our roadmap is chunks of releases with major feature sets in each release. So we do a pretty good job of that. I think our grooming is one of the causes for the planning time. So that's waste. Let's just call it what it is. Waste. There's a little bit of waste there. One of the things we do fit things into the pause. So one of the things we do, in fact, we're coming up on this, is we have 3 days of what we call innovation days.
Right, okay.
So innovation days is developers test, the team decides, they actually decide what they're going to work on.
Right.
And they focus on it. So the last 3 days of stabilization week, remember that week after the release, is innovation day. So we brought in a 3-day training class a release ago, and the time to do it was in this pause.
Right.
So we target things in the pause. But you're right. The planning, I think, it's an excuse a little bit for planning.
Right.
Yeah, inefficiency.
And I've had real trouble with extended planning periods, right? Of this crunch of planning that's just never worked well for me, because people get burnt out, they get frustrated, they don't want to deal with it. They're like, I'm sick and tired of this. Let's just get going.
So you're emphasizing grooming along the way.
Yeah.
Is the point?
Yeah. So that's what's really helped us, is to try and chunk it, right? Of doing little pieces along the way, working towards ready when it's go time, right? Because we just are not good at big bang planning, even when your big bang is relatively small.
Oh, don't take this as state of the art. I am not. I mean, I wrote a book on this subject of backlog management, Josh, and this is not so it breaks my heart. It breaks, you know, but teams do what they do, right? And you can only, you can change them at whatever pace. But our grooming is suspect. I wish we could get it better. If we could, if we could do it, it is the right way to do it. So big bang planning is actually, to me, an anti-pattern.
Right.
You can get by, it can be sufficient, but the way to do agile planning, it almost should be, there should never be a big bang planning event. It should be this rolling wave understanding of what the heck we're doing.
Right. Yeah, and I wish that we are good at rolling planning on the sprint level. On release level planning, we are not good at all.
Yeah, but that's the size of your release, for gosh sakes, right?
Because we have to be, so...
How could you... That's one of the downsides of having such a massive release.
Exactly.
Is how do you handle that on a rolling... There is no rolling wave in that.
Right.
It's independent of the corporate commitment to content. It's really hard to do that.
Well, and here's the frustrating thing. So we commit, but halfway through, we change.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, why do we go through all that if we know it's going to change?
Do you change upward as well?
Yeah.
So you do change. So you do have the ability to change upward.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of waterfall shops. So there's this facade of underneath the covers, you're making changes, but then somehow you have to translate that. You know, the executive view is very little change.
Right.
So you're somehow trying to mislead them into believing that there's this static structure.
And most of our changes come from external forces, such as large customers that come on board, where that executive is like, yes. Scrap that and do this. So we win this or do whatever. So there's a lot of external forces that are driving our planning alterations.
We are talking about changing our tempo. In fact, we're going to do it. I think we're talking about at the end of the year. So we're starting another release, which will end in December, I think early December, and then we're talking about pausing over the holidays, just sort of letting going into a bug fix mode. But then kicking it off in January, we've talked about a new tempo, and I think it's going to be shorter. So we talk about, is it two-week sprints?
What kind of tempo? Your release
Our release tempo. It could be our sprint tempo. So it could be a three-week, so monthly. There's all these camps, okay. And there's all these trade-offs. There's the camp that says, let's have a full three-week sprint, and then have a minor hardening. So you're basically pushing to production on a monthly basis. There's the camp that says it's two-week sprints with a slightly larger hardening. So now you have 4 weeks of development capacity contributing to the release. I think we're probably going to get into one of those monthly or, somewhere in every 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Right now, we're basically, if you think about our tempo, we're basically quarterly.
Right.
It's every 10 weeks, but then we have these buffer, we have these stabilization periods, which balloons it up to a 12-week. Yeah. A 12-week window. So
I would love that if I could just get every quarter
in your environment.
Yeah,
it would be a goal for you if you could get
it.
Into
is a goal for me. Yeah,
yeah, to so. Get a quarterly release going. So we are inevitably, I think, going to go shorter. If I have a worry and it comes into tempo, it's like, where's the so what? So as you, one of the neat things for you is, and you may not like this, but if you wait for 6 months, you have a big. Your reveal at the end of that is massive, right? Mm-hmm. From a customer's point of view, from the sales folks' point of view, it's like, I have version 1 and I have version 1.1. So they invested 6 months. If you go to quarterly, now suddenly it's a half of the reveal.
Right.
So now folks who used to get a large, massive quantity of new stuff, they get half of that. If we went to monthly, you would get...
Right.
So as you start reducing it, I think it's harder to sit... In a lot of environments, it's harder to tell the story. It's harder to sell the what you did.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder for people to get excited about what you did. And I worry a little bit about that. The other thing is field preparation. For us, every release we do, we have a training department. So the training department has to upgrade training materials. The marketing department has to understand the features we're about to release.
Right.
So there's ancillary stuff that has to happen on a release.
Right. Yeah, we have those same pressures, and that's a lot of the reasoning I get of why we can't support more smaller releases because of the cost.
It's the functional. It's these outward, it's accounting, it's sales, it's pre-sales support, it's education, things like that, right? That you have to consider. You actually have to know. It's probably, you could probably compress them.
Because it's such a crutch to, say, well, we can't do that.
Exactly.
Because of the external.
Yeah,
because something we can't change.
Exactly. Right?
Whereas what I don't understand of why it costs more to do half as much twice as often as it does to do what you're doing right now.
I think that's change resistance. Yeah. I mean, I think in my experience, there's probably 20-30% the reality of a cost or making a change, and maybe 70% just good old fashioned. We've done it this way for 20 years.
Yeah.
We're not going to change. It's just mostly that just that rationalization against any change whatsoever.
Right.
Particularly something that's going to make you what you're going to work. You have to be faster. You have to be nimbler.
Right.
You in our and it's actually helped us. Because you can see us in our marketing, our sales, our customer support. They like it, but initially it was like, crap, we have a six-month tempo that's now, as it reduces, it gets a little bit more frenetic. They get a little more energy, and they have to respond. I was going to try to think of, there was one other topic that I was trying to, hardening.
Hardening.
Reactions to hardening.
Love it and hate it all at the same time. Right, so one of the things I really try and push So the frustrating piece.
So do you do hardening?
We do, reluctantly.
Oh, I can't believe you do that.
We do.
I'm looking down my nose at you. you partial agilist, you.
We do, and it's frustrating because our doneness criteria means that there's no bugs in the code that we've written. But we have this huge app that's old code that we keep finding bugs in, right? So we're always fighting that battle where it gets to the point where we're doing everything we can and we're producing solid features, but the underlying pieces that are there that have existed that we're testing that we haven't tested for however long, we keep finding these bugs. So there are times when we have to put the brakes on and say, let's fix it, let's get our backlog where it needs to be, let's get back on track. So I don't like it, but we do it.
It's a legacy. I mean, you inherited code when you joined the company. I mean, I think in terms of greenfield versus, I would love to have some greenfield agile projects and start right and start well. I haven't had the opportunity to do that very often or at all. I mean, very, very few opportunities in companies. And maybe a little project would be a greenfield project. But I think it's a legacy burden you have to deal with.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same thing for us. So we try to hit zero defects, even escaping the sprints. But, I mean, that's not a perfect rule. Sometimes we'll have things that just have to escape a sprint. Right.
Well, and we have bugs that are found that our product owners, like, don't waste your time on that.
Exactly.
Right? We aren't going to say the feature's not done. It's just... Yeah, we're not going to worry about that.
Exactly.
That's some crazy edge case. That's not going to happen.
The things we're focusing on this release, we made a... So the last release, we had a lot of escapes. Bugs. We define escapes as bugs that should have been found. So they're not historical bugs in the code base, but they're escapes from our testing. And we injected them, if you will.
Right.
And we didn't scrub them early enough. And I think last release we had like 50 of them or something like that, which was just an outrageous number.
Right.
And this is across, not one team, but this is across the entire release. Now we're measuring them as part of our doneness criteria. And I think yesterday we had like maybe 5. And every team is guaranteeing that we're going to release with 0, which is cool. So we vary. Do you vary your doneness criteria? We sort of vary our doneness depending on... Or harden it up, is the way I think of it, right? We have the same doneness criteria, but we really focus on it with like charts and things like that, just to keep the team's eye on what's important.
We don't vary too much.
No.
You know me, I'm a consistent guy.
Yeah. Well, it's not that we vary, we shine a light on it. Like, we have an information radiator in our scrum of scrum area, which does a snapshot of, like, this is the open bug count on a per team basis.
Right.
So we want to, which is not what we did in the last release. Final question, sort of releases, at least for me, is if I use my release example instead of your own, are all those sprints of four 2-week sprints? Are all of those sprints created equal? Are all of
you know that answer. What you're at? Come on.
Are they all? No, I'm being honest. That's a sincere question.
Ideally,
sir.
Yes. Realistically, no.
So what are some of the changes? Sprint to sprint to sprint.
Right. So as you pick up features, you might be doing some design or just what the focus of that sprint is on. I would hope that your velocity is about the same, but your work type is probably much different.
Well, that's what I'm trying to mine here. I was giving you a softball, man.
I know.
So a release, no, but I think it's an important part that people miss on release planning. Life is not just about features, just whacking, you know, whacking the team and putting features. Let's call them sprint A to D. So what would sprint A look like in your mind versus D? You know, go through sprint A, B, C, and D.
Well, sprint A, you're going to be able to get up and running on some of the smaller features, but some of the bigger features that are on your plate, you're going to have to spend some sizable time on design and ramp up maybe a proof of concept or something like
that. So I like that. So traction.
Right.
Get a little positive momentum going is what I heard. And then design time.
Right. Maybe.
So if you had spikes to do, you would be seeding user story spikes, research spikes. You would be seeding them in sprint A.
Yeah, we always work on the biggest, scariest stuff first.
I like that.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
Right? So a bulk of the time is going to be spent on those big scary things, and let's figure out how we're really going to make this happen. But also, we need to get some things done, right? So we'll get some people off working on some of the smaller pieces. And then we'll transition into more actually working and developing over B and C. And then D should be more of the wind down, right? So you're wrapping up the bits and pieces, and you're getting the final testing, your performance testing, your scalability testing, things like that. You know, you get 50 people clicking on a thing at once and all that fun stuff.
So integration, things like that, indeed. We reserve some of that for hardening, and we would complete it. By the end of B, how much do you want to have done for the release? What do you think?
How much do I want to have done?
Yeah.
50%.
50%. The magical answer.
No, I'd be happy in the 40s. If I'd get below 40s, I'd start to get worried.
But it's something to keep your eye on. Is one of the, so in my mind, something that is completion rates, like not at a story level, but at a release. So release burn downs. You would track a release burn down, and you would look at like midpoint. I think there's a midpoint interest level of, to me, it's a trouble alarm. If we're somewhere between, you know, if you were like below 25%, you know, red lights are going off.
Right.
If you're above 75%, green lights are going off. It's like an array. Or in all seriousness, right, it's you're either accelerating or you're not. So I think that's the other part of it is looking at metrics from a release level and then having trouble indicators. You might want to jettison, start jettisoning features or freezing features and saying...
Yeah, and that's a common frustration I have that as soon as we get ahead on our release burn down, the first reaction is, what else can we put in? You know, it's like, well, let's see if we stay ahead.
Absolutely. Right. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So that's always a big battle that I fight, that right now on the release we're working on, we're ahead of schedule. Right? Not by a whole lot, but we're ahead.
Yeah.
And people are talking about, what can we squeeze in? Like, let's make sure we maintain this.
I think you're absolutely right.
So.
Right. Yeah. But that's that youthful. That's one of the dangers of the transparency at a release level.
Yeah.
Right, is you have that enthusiasm that can build up. What I'm poking at, and you are as well, is I think release planning has connections back to good old fashioned project management. Those tenets where this is before your time, Josh, right? but you know, things like work on the hard stuff earlier.
Right.
Have milestone targets that you measure yourself against.
Right.
If you don't hit a milestone target, don't wait to the end. Take corrective action now.
Right.
Right. Try to do, you know, not micromanage people, but to take corrective action. Leverage your burn down charts. Look at threads of things like quality, for example. Don't short shrift. You know, if you're exceeding sprint A, one of the our you know, folks in sprint A, they don't mind breaking some of our doneness criteria. The logic is, well, we have three more sprints.
Yeah, that's scary.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes you hear that conversation. It's like, no, we have to hold to our doneness criteria so that we can measure doneness. So it's that, I think it's that thinking. You were talking about doing performance testing in sprint D. Well, maybe in C if you could do
right?
If you could put it. So that above story, I think, planning needs to happen. That's one of the things that we're getting good at. I should end on a high note because we don't suck at everything. We actually are pretty, I feel pretty good about the teams. But we when we do blitz planning, we do a nice job of load balancing what work across four sprints, right? We actually select what are the things we're going to end the release with.
Right.
Sometimes we end with risk. Sometimes we end with no risk. But we might pick a couple threads going forward there. What's our 50% target? What are we going to do if we don't meet it? We'll have some risk and contingency around that.
Okay. Cool. Well.
Did we cover it?
We did.
We out of time?
Yeah.
We have a natural tempo of I think
45 to 50 minutes.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
It feels right to me.
It's like magic.
This was a good topic today. I sort of enjoy this. The notion of tempo and release planning. It's real. I feel it's a really important topic, and I don't think it's static. Maybe let's wrap up with that. Don't get stuck.
Right.
I mean, are you stuck in your tempo? I don't
know.
We're constantly like not sort of not macro changes, but micro changes and rethinking it.
Exactly.
Do you work with the team on it? Do you talk to the team about it?
No.
Or are you the maestro that just wants
to? It is commanded from upon high.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I wanted to confirm that. No, I'm constantly talking to the team about it, and I'm sure you are as well.
It's you have to have buy-in, right? And they have to believe in it, or else it's
not going to work. You just talk. It's, to me, it's just turning knobs sometimes, and you want the team to be part of that.
Yep.
Metacasters, we want to as always, we want to thank you for dialing in. We want to thank you for the time. Hope you enjoyed
people
the
don't
topic.
Dial in with a podcast, Bob. This isn't, you know,
1930.
Yeah, no, there's no dials.
All right, so why don't you finish us off then?
Thanks for
please, Mr. Modern Man. Please.
Thanks for clicking in or something like that.
Oh, you're so smooth.
I am. You know what can I say? It's better than dialing in. Well, come on. Do you hear any static out there? I mean,
stop! Stop! He's beating me to death here.
All right, so Metacast, wrap it up here. So you can find us at metacast.com on Twitter, meta-cast at twitter.com, and maybe even Facebook. Maybe we need a fan page on
Facebook.
Oh my
gosh. I have resisted Facebook like the plague.
So have I. I got roped into it because of work, because we're doing some social networking thing, and I'm leading that, so I got roped into
it. We're actually doing an interface to Facebook. It may force me to.
So are we, and it's not as straightforward as I would hope. They like to keep things to themselves.
Yes.
So
that's what we're discovering as well.
Yeah. So okay. So from beautiful where?
Well, not quite yet. We want your topics. We thank you.
I thought I was doing the outro.
Okay.
No,
so topics. Topics.
Topics. Email. Twitter.
Facebook.
Facebook. Maybe someday. Soon.
Phone call. Ham radio.
Telegraph. Bob is manning the telegraph station right now.
Did it, dot it, dot it, da.
Yes.
So yes, we love your feedback. Get us feedback on content, on flow, on topics.
That's the only way we're going to get better, folks.
And so from?
Beautiful North Carolina.
Downtown Cary.
Well, downtown.
All right, forget it. You're doing it.
From beautiful Bob's house in Cary, North Carolina. This is Josh Anderson.
Bob Kalen. I'm dying here. Shake and bake.